I need some more art in the house. It's a lot of blank wall space.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at Basketball Monster, and you can find me on Twitter as always at @RedRock_Bball. We're going to be covering Tuesday's action in the NBA, recapping all of those games. We're going to be previewing a Wednesday slate for DFS. We're going to be shining the player spotlight on Josh Hart of the Los Angeles Lakers, and you're going to hear a bit from the NBA commissioner Adam Silver in today's show, and the full interview there will be appearing on Locked On NBA on the Thursday show. So lots to talk about today.
Let's get to it indeed.
We will start with the monstrous line of the night, and it goes to Blake Griffin of the Detroit Pistons. 26-9-10 for Griff going up against the Phoenix Suns. He had three triples, he had a block as well. 9 of 15 from the field and 5 of 5 from the free throw line. There was a stage a couple of weeks ago where Griffin was really, really struggling. You know, couldn't put together any sort of big performances back at the end of February, just after he came across in the trade. But recently the numbers have been back up and he's back to being a top 30 player over the last 2 weeks, which is an improvement over his full season value. In those last 7 games, he's averaging 23, 6, and 6.7 assists with almost half a steal and half a block, and the efficiency's come back up as well. He's only a 44% shooter for the season, but he's hitting his shots at a much more efficient rate, 47 from the field, 81 from the line, and 45% from three. Of course, we expect that three-point percentage to regress, but it's good to see that after that initial adjustment period when it was like, oh shit, what's going on here with Blake Griffin, that he has sort of got things sorted back out and rewriting the ship and putting up numbers, which we haven't seen from him, honestly, in a couple of seasons. The injury risk is always going to be a problem for him. His aging and decline in athleticism can be an issue, but he is supplementing his game by doing extra things, by hitting threes and by getting these assists. And he is averaging more assists in Detroit than he was in LA. One side part of that is it's really impacted Andre Drummond's assist numbers. He was a guy who was putting up 4 or 5 assists per game, and that has really tumbled since Griffin has arrived in Detroit. So that's been a negative impact on Andre Drummond's fantasy value, while Griffin's assist numbers have continued to rise. He's going to be always that risky proposition in drafts, but should be set for another top 50, perhaps top 40 season next year. And hopefully for his owners, he can continue rolling this year. The waiver wire line of the night, well, again,
sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
Al-Farouq Aminu was good once again, 22-8-4 with 6 triples. I think he had 16 points in the first quarter. He had a steal, he had a block, he was 7 of 11 from the field and 2 of 3 from the free throw line. He is a top 50 player over the last 2 weeks. The numbers really firing up. He scored in double digits for 4 consecutive games, and his last 2 games have been spectacular against the Rockets and the Clippers, averaging 19 points per game, 5 threes per game, 8 rebounds, and 5 assists along with 2 steals on shooting of high 50s from the field. Clearly those numbers aren't going to persist. He's not going to hit 5 threes a game. He's not going to give 5 assists per game. He's not going to shoot 58% from the field. We know all these things won't continue for Al-Farouq Aminu, but with multiple three-pointers in 4 consecutive games, the minutes up over 30 in his past 5 games, his ability to rebound, he does have some value. Now, of course, we know with that sound drop that I play, the Chief is prone to just do nothing. He's averaging under 10 points per game for the season. It shows you just how poor he can be at times, but the rebounding, the steals, the threes, and when you're getting an efficiency boost like you are at the moment, he is a guy to grab for this short-term run. The problem here is that the Blazers don't play again until Friday, and Friday is a huge volume day. So if you're adding him, will he actually see your active roster on Friday? In some cases, it will be yes. In some cases, it will be no, but can you afford to take up that streaming spot for the next 2 days for a guy that you might not even activate on Friday? So bear that in mind. He's still got 2 more games left this week, and that is an important thing to pay attention to with any pickup in fantasy playoff season, which is currently where we are. The young gun of the night goes to Jason Tatum of the Boston Celtics. 23 and 11 for Tatum, 3 triples with 4 assists. He had a steal and a block also, and was 8 of 12 from the field and 4 of 4 from the free throw line. I talked about how before the Marcus Smart, Jaylen Brown, and Kyrie Irving injuries hit, he was struggling, and his minutes were well down. He couldn't hit anything. His usage was plummeting. He was doing really very little for this Celtics team, and he became a guy where he was on the border of whether you held him or not. But since those injuries have hit over the last 2 weeks, he's pushed himself back inside the top 100, averaging 17 and 6.5 in 33 minutes. And someone tweeted me today after this big performance, "Oh, do you still not believe he's ever going to be a top 30 player?" And I still don't believe he's going to be that, because these numbers are great. 17 and 6, yeah, they're good numbers, 50% shooting. But he still isn't a top 80 player over these last 2 weeks, because he just doesn't do enough in the defensive stats. The assists are always lacking. The usage feels like it's never going to be as high, or at least it won't be this high in the next 2 to 3 seasons as what it currently is at the moment. But for now, he's clearly providing some value for us. His three-point percentage has started to normalize. He's at 38% over the last 2 months after that red hot start, then a real drop off. So he is a high 30s three-point shooter, which is obviously fantastic for a rookie, and he's got room to improve. And he could very, look, he's going to probably finish this season as a 40-plus percent three-point guy, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him dip 2% next year and become a 41 or 40% guy, which is still excellent. There was just that obviously huge run to begin the season, which kept his value fairly inflated. I also think his minutes are going to drop when Jaylen returns, which is likely in the next game. Maybe it's by 1 or 2 minutes. But with the uncertainty surrounding Kyrie Irving, he might not be going down to those 26 or 27 minutes he was getting when everyone was healthy. And also with Marcus Smart out of commission for the rest of the regular season, Tatum should be pretty strong. He's a very good roto player, just solid right across the board. His head-to-head value is not quite as pronounced, though, just because of those average to below average contributions in all of the categories. The dart of the night. I tell a man's not hot. Lord Alfred Payton was not hot once again. 4-3-5 on 2 of 6 from the field and 0 of 2 from the free throw line. When he came across to Phoenix, he was absolutely on fire, putting up big game after big game. He dropped 19-6-9, 29-8-5, 13-11-12 in his first 3 games since joining the Suns. And then he had a string of huge games. He had a 19-10-4, an 18-10-8 with 2 steals and 2 blocks, a triple-double after that. And then it all went sour. The minutes started plummeting. He couldn't hit any shots. And we haven't seen him reach 30 minutes in a game since back on the 2nd of March. So we're talking 3 weeks ago since he last played 30 minutes. And some of these games have been without Devin Booker, which you would think, yeah, okay, he had those early games without Booker. And yeah, he was allowing him extra minutes, but now Booker's out. Should they go back up? Well, that's a realistic expectation. It's just not happening for him at the moment. Really hard to consider him a must-own guy at this point. He's outside the top 160 over the last month and the top 290 over the last 2 weeks. The free throw percentage has plummeted with the confidence drop. The field goal percentage is pretty poor. He's just not getting the playing time. He's scoring at 8 points per game in his last 6 games. The 5 assists are still nice, and that's stream worthy, but I wouldn't be considering Alfred Payton a must-own guy at this point. Just with the pattern of the way that the Suns are running things, it seems really unlikely that he's going to go back to playing 34 a night and getting these big numbers. It just doesn't seem like a realistic scenario at this point, which is disappointing for him, obviously, heading into his free agency season, and for the Suns, who thought, you know, when he first arrived, look, we're seeing a guy that's really starting to thrive here, but that clearly hasn't been the case lately. In a playoff situation, a do-or-die roto type scenario, a guy who's consistently getting so few minutes and being so poor, there's no point in holding on to him. I don't believe I'd rather stream through that spot and get in my specialist and getting the guys I need, because the direction and the angle of things for Payton aren't heading in that right direction, or the direction, of course, that we would want them to be heading in. All right, now what I'm going to do, I promised this on yesterday's show. On the Locked On NBA podcast that's coming out on Thursday, NBA Commissioner Adam Silver sat down with David Locke for a wide-ranging chat on numerous topics. I'm going to play a snippet of that interview now, then I'm going to give a bit of a comment after it. It's about Silver and his thoughts on gambling in the NBA and how that pertains to competition levels in the NBA. And I think there's some relevancy for fantasy, for DFS, and for season-long fantasy as well. So I'll play the interview that will appear on Locked On NBA on Thursday with Commissioner Adam Silver and David Locke.
You've been forward-thinking in regards to gambling. If you do get involved with gambling the way it's been talked about, do you have to eliminate anything that incentivizes losing?
That's a great question. I mean, the problem is, if you put it that starkly, that any time you have a draft that rewards a team for poor performance, and reward by meaning the very purpose of the draft as we have it is to help the poorest performing teams restock with the best incoming players, I guess I can't answer that question affirmatively that we can eliminate anything. I think, though, that to the extent sports betting becomes legal, widespread in the United States, not just in Nevada, that we're going to have to especially focus on a lot of these integrity issues, and that, you know, it doesn't just go to those people who will be betting on the games, legally betting on the games, but it's something that goes to the heart of what a sports league is about, and that's competition. Now, my hesitation a little bit too is, you know, putting aside tanking, I'll say the word, which to me suggests players or coaches are intentionally losing games, and I think if I, as the commissioner, ever thought that was what was actually happening on the floor, of course we'd step in. But then there is a legitimate rebuilding. You see it in lots of businesses where an organization says we need to bring in new talent. It's going to take time to develop and train them, or we have some existing talent, and as you see sometimes in the league with young players that aren't getting a lot of minutes. So I'm not about to penalize a team for trading away a veteran to get draft picks, because that's how the league works. So finding and calibrating this is not an exact science, but we'll even have to spend that much more time focused on it if sports betting becomes legal.
All right, that was NBA Commissioner Adam Silver. That interview will appear on Locked On NBA on Thursday. I think there's a few interesting takeaways from that piece for us as fantasy players. Silver is obviously well aware of the perception issue of tanking and the competitive issue. And if that's something that's, you know, playing a part in discussions and thought process regarding gambling, it can be carried over to season-long fantasy and to DFS as well. It is a confusing situation for me, I guess, because, you know, sports gambling's been legal in Australia for quite a long time. You're talking 20 plus years. So for you guys, as much as it's illegal, yeah, everyone over there knows how to bet on sports, but, you know, getting it legalized, I think, would help bring all that stuff out into the open. You know, Silver, the tanking stuff is something that's, you know, related to gambling and would help us a lot for DFS in terms of getting late scratches, bullshit Tyreek Evans, you know, resting situations, getting all that stuff out in the open earlier, big punishments for breaking the rules. That would help us a lot in terms of fantasy. The smoothing of lottery odds has helped us in that sense, and creating competitive games all the way through the season is important. But what, you know, Adam was talking about is, or Commissioner Silver, I don't know him, in terms of, you know, being able to develop your young players, I don't think anyone's really got too much of a concern with it. It's when if you sub out a subpar veteran for a young player, that's fine. It's when you sit down the really good players and tell them don't play for 2 months, like Eric Bledsoe. That's where it really becomes a problem in terms of what this team is doing, or even the way that players or teams like the Atlanta Hawks have done this time. When a player's going off, we'll just sit them for the last half because they're playing too well, and that might cause us to win a game. So they're the things that are going to be important. But it's clear that it's the gambling side of things and concern about tanking is something that's forefront into Silver's mind. So it is going to be interesting to see how that all plays out. And when gambling does become legal, I imagine the NBA is going to be the first league to embrace it, because they are, you know, more forward thinking than pretty much any major sports league in America. Let's talk about these games now across the NBA that went down on Tuesday. The first game we're going to talk about is it's the Toronto Raptors and the Orlando Magic. DeMar DeRozan rested this game. Lowry rested a game across the weekend. So Kyle saw a larger workload here, 37 minutes and had 25, 5 and 8. But without Freddie VanVleet, DeLon Wright still got his minutes up. 10, 5 and 4, a steal and a block, and continues to be impressive over this little run. But when DeRozan and VanVleet are back, Wright's unlikely to be a guy who retains 12-team league value. We also saw some weirdness in terms of the center rotation. Valanciunas only the 19 minutes, while Jakob Poeltl played only 11, and that's because Bebe Naguera played 17 consecutive minutes. He's a guy that we don't see in every game, but generally when he plays well, and his advanced statistics all bear that out. He was solid here again, another 2 blocks with 4 points and 4 rebounds, but it's not something that I think is going to be an ongoing concern in terms of him cutting into other players' playing time. Ibaka was also pretty good, 13 and 6, but I guess the big story out of this game was the performance of John Isaac for the Orlando Magic. You know, I've been really, really reaching around on John Isaac all season, and this is why. 28 minutes starting at small forward. I still think his best position is either forward or center. Sorry, power forward or center. But playing at small forward here, he played 28 minutes. He had 10 points, but he hit 2 triples. He had 5 rebounds. He had 5 steals and he had 2 blocks. He and Nerlens Noel are probably the 2 best defensive stream options on the waiver wire, with Evan Fournier, Terrence Ross struggling with their respective knee injuries, and now John Simmons dealing with a wrist problem. There are minutes there for Isaac, and even if those guys come back, I don't think they're going to be cutting into Isaac's playing time too much. This guy has a real, you know, a shot of being a top 30, top 40 fantasy guy at some point, not this season clearly, and probably not next year, but I think he's going to be a draftable guy next season. And if that offense starts to come around, which we saw glimpses of today, the hitting the threes, getting some rebounds, he's a very good rebounder, and the defensive stuff's fantastic. So be on the lookout for this guy. I've been pumping him up for a while, and this is why. Azza Gordon was back 16-6 with 2 triples, a steal and a block, so that's good for him down the stretch, while Vooch had 15-9. And Shelvin Mack continued his strong run of form. Unlikely to think of him as a 12-team guy, though he had 17 with 4 assists. DJ Augustine had 9 points. He had 10 assists, so that's pretty strong performance from DJ there as well. So, look, I think Augustine's a guy that you do need to own in your league, but far from saying he's a must-own guy or anything along those lines. Let's go on to the next game, the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Boston Celtics. A massive, massive win for the Celtics. Huge comeback to get that victory. It didn't seem very likely until Carmelo Anthony missed a couple of late free throws along with Russell Westbrook. Paul George was great, 24-13. Well, Corey Brewer continues. 36 minutes for Brewer, 11-5 with 2 steals and a block. As weird as it seems, I think you have to have him in your team. Westbrook, I talked about the free throws. He had 27-8-7, but went 7-11 from the line. And after that resurgence through February, the free throws have dropped back off to season-long levels, and that's a real issue at this point in the season with your playoffs underway. With the emergence of Brewer, Jeremy Grant is seeing his minutes drop pretty significantly, under 10 minutes in this one, while Terrence Ferguson, Alex Abrines, Joshy Huestis, and Pat Patterson are getting the bulk of those minutes, while Mello, a subpar performance, 13-5-3 for Carmelo Anthony. In a 10-team league, I'm not certain that you need to hold on to him. For the Celtics, Kyrie, the news is he's going to miss this road trip, which is 4 games, and then he's going to get second opinion on that knee. Now, there's no structural issue, still a lot of knee soreness, but hopefully he can avoid surgery. In some situations, you may have to drop him. If you need players for this week, it's almost impossible to hold on to someone. But of course, we're talking about a top 15, top 20 guy. But when he comes back, it seems unlikely he'll be playing 30 minutes straight away. Marcus Morris was big again, 21-4. And while Jaylen Brown is out, Morris does have 12-team value. And Greggy Monroe had 17-6 in 22 minutes with a steal and a block. Another big performance from Monroe, and clearly is having value. But I do think the Browns' return pushes Morris up to the four more and takes some of that playing time away from Monroe as Horford goes across to center. A lot of people are telling me, oh, they want to drop Al Horford. Yes, he only had 5 points. That's poor. 2 of 9 shooting, but he still had 6 rebounds, 7 assists, and 2 blocks. And under no circumstance would I be dropping Al Horford personally. The LA Clippers and the Minnesota Timberwolves. Sean Kilpatrick, on the last day of his 10-day contract, dropped in 15 points in 20 minutes, but there's only a couple of days to go until the end of the Aguacaliente Clippers G League season, meaning Ty, the list manager, Wallace, and CJ Williams can rejoin the team, so it seems unlikely that Kilpatrick will be any part of the rotation there. Toby Harris got in foul trouble, so don't look at that line and be overly concerned. Lou Williams was okay, but this game was a blowout, so Doc pulled the starters with about 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Of course, Tom Thibodeau didn't. Karl Anthony Towns was still in the game with a 20-point margin and a minute 30 left on the clock. That is absolute insanity. He played 41 minutes. Wigo was out there. Taj Gibson was out there right until the very end. Well, not the very end. They came out with about 2 and 2.5 minutes left, respectively. It is insanity in terms of coaching when there is absolutely... Doc Rivers gave up. He said, we're done here with 7-8 minutes left. And Tibbs went, nah, man, we're 20 points up. We still got to keep pushing. Just ludicrous coaching. Townsie had 30-10 with 3 triples and 2 steals, while Wigo had 27-3. Added in the 3 blocks and a steal, and that's what he's going to need to do, is add some defensive numbers to become a top 50 fantasy guy. Not sure if he can do it, but it was big from him there. Well, Jeff Teague.
My name is Jeff.
24-12. He is really benefiting from Jim Butler's absence. Now, I said earlier in this season that I think Tyus Jones would work better as a starting point guard for this team. Under no circumstance did I mean that Jones is a better player than Teague, but in terms of fitting alongside Wiggins, Butler, and Towns, I thought he fit better. But without Butler there, yeah, what Teague does is so much more important than what Tyus Jones does. So yeah, he is really putting that those numbers up. Derrick Rose shockingly hurt his ankle and he was unable to return. 9 points in 7 minutes for Rose. Clearly, he is not a fantasy option. Well, Nemanja Bjelica saw his minutes dip for the second consecutive game. Only 22 minutes here, while Jamal Crawford played 33 and dropped 20 points. Crawford more of a points streamer than anything else. And I am still holding Bjelica in our standard leagues despite this performance. The Dallas Mavericks and the New Orleans Pelicans. Nerlens Noel, 20 minutes. And the defense there again, 2 steals and 2 blocks with 6 rebounds. Again, with John Isaac, the best defensive steals and blocks specialist that is on your wire in a lot of cases. So he's an ownable player, while Dwight Powell had 11 and 6. No Dennis Smith, so JJ Brea got the start. He had 10, 4 and 8 in 29 minutes. Played a few more minutes than I expected him to, but those assists are obviously quite useful. While the pencil Harrison Barnes had 19 in his 34 minutes, and Yogi Ferrell had 15 and 3. I think Ferrell is more that 14 to 16 team league player. On the Pelicans, Tone Davis was a monster. 37 and 8 with 2 blocks and 2 triples. Of course, he had his obligatory trip to the locker room after copping a sort of like a kick in the shin. He had this lump develop, but he returned to start the second half. Missed only 2 minutes of game action, and he played 35 minutes in their first of their back-to-back-to-back. Drew Holiday was out with an illness, so Solomon Hill started. He only played 11 minutes, while Emeka Okafor only played 5 minutes, and they changed that starting lineup to start the second half with Nick Mirotic getting into the starting lineup ahead of Okafor. Mirotic ended up with 8-7 in 31 minutes, and he is not a must-own shallow league guy. Whereas Rondo had a big one, 19, 9, and 14 with 3 steals, including 9 or 7 points in the last couple of minutes of this game. Obviously still putting up the numbers that make him an ownable guy, but there will be some stinkers in there. Ian Clark was also good, replacing Holiday, 19 points, and Cheick Diallo, another strong game from Diallo, 10 and 14 in 24 minutes. He's really playing himself into a significant role. Whether he can continue to play more than Emeka Okafor remains to be seen. I would like to see them try it, but I don't have full confidence in that happening, knowing Elvin Gentry's lack of trust in Diallo over his first couple of seasons. The Atlanta Hawks and the Utah Jazz, a stunning win from the Hawks to go into Utah to beat them. They've beaten them both times this season. There was no Baptist John Collins, so Mike Muscala started. He had 8 and 5, 2 steals, two triples and a block. They're nice performances, and Collins is going to be out Thursday as well, so Muscala does have some short-term value. The artist formerly known as Taurean Prince got the big minutes again. Couldn't hit his shots, 11 points on 13 shots, but still, that's a nice performance. Well, Dennis Schroeder went absolutely bananas, 41, 5 and 7 on 28 attempts and hit 57% of them, while the Undertaker, Dwayne Dedman, had 15 and 15, 4 assists, 2 steals and a block. With John Collins out, Dwayne Dedman's value has definitely risen. We saw Damian Lee start over Tyler Dorsey. He played 32 minutes. He closed the game, but he didn't do a huge amount, 5 and 6, while Dorsey went down to only 20 minutes in this one and didn't do a huge amount himself. Neither of those guys is really sniffing 12-team value. On the Jazz, big games from the starters, 23 for Rubio. Gobert had 15 and 16. Jingle and Joe had 16, 8 and 7, while Don Mitchell had 24, 6 and 4. Some poor shooting from Ingles and Mitchell in particular, and the bench did very little. There was no Derek Favors, so Jonas Jerebko started. He did nothing, while Jay Crowder also saw a bump, and he did very little. And Crowder is really on that 12-team borderline area. The Detroit Pistons and the Phoenix Suns. Lukey Kennard, another strong game from Kennard. I'm telling you, this guy's going to be good, and he's going to be a good fantasy player. 24 minutes, 16, 6, and 3 with 2 blocks and 3 triples. His minutes seem to be up. So I'm really interested in him, even for the rest of this season. I think he can become a 12-team guy, but taking speculative ads on guys now is not the way to go. Drummond had 10 and 10 with 5 blocks, got himself into some foul trouble, hence the lower minutes, but still a pretty nice performance. While Reggie Jackson returned. Great to see him back. He only played 15 minutes and had 7 points with 2 assists. Now, whether he is an ad in your leagues depends. I think a guy like Jackson, who, when he's fit and firing, is only playing 28 minutes a night and is a borderline guy anyway, while he's working his way back, I don't think that that becomes a must-own situation in 10 or 12-team leagues. Ish Smith still played 30 minutes and had 13, 3, and 3, but his minutes are going to drop as Jackson's increase. Reggie Bullock struggled, only 12 points in 21 minutes, and he is more of a points and threes efficiency type streamer. On the Suns, no Devin Booker, so Troy Daniels had 18 points with 4 triples. Some nice numbers once again from Daniels. He's a 3-point streamer, but value loses, of course, when Booker returns. Well, Alex Len had a big game, 19 and 12 with 3 blocks. No Tyson Chandler. I don't think we really see Chandler for the rest of the season, but Len is as inconsistent as they come and far from a must-own guy. Talked about Peyton already. Well, Joshie Jackson was inefficient from the field and the line, a true shooting of 35%, but had 15 and 11 and had 2 assists and a steal. And with TJ Warren dealing with that knee issue and Booker hurting with his hand, then Jackson, I think, is a guy that you should own in pretty much all leagues. The last game of the night, the Rockets and the Blazers. Jimmy Harden, 42, 6 and 7. Obviously another big game from Harden. Unfortunately, him getting to the line 15 times and not hitting as many as what he normally does really reduce that value overall, but still, that's pretty solid. Chrissy Paul had 22, 8 and 6, but unfortunately late in the game, he grabbed at his hamstring. We don't know the severity of it at this point, but it is obviously something to monitor. And if he is out, then Eric Gordon's value does rise. Now, Gordo had 18 and 4 with 3 triples here, but when Paul is out, he sees his assist rise. He sees his free throw attempts rise, which really do boost his value. Capella struggled while Ryan Anderson only played 9 minutes in a bench role. On the Blazers, Mo Harkless, the shooting continued, did not miss a single shot here, 17 points with 3 triples. He's been on a 4-game insane field goal percentage run, which is really boosting his value. He is not a guy that is 100% a must-own guy, but while he's flying like this, why not? Nurkic was also big, 21 and 11 with 2 steals and 4 blocks, while Lillard struggled his way to 20 points. It took him 17 shots, and McCollum had a real stinker, 8 points in 34 minutes for CJ. All right, let's talk player spotlight now. We're going to be looking at Josh, the Hitman Hart. Josh Hart was a late first-round pick of the Los Angeles Lakers this season. He was starting to put up some pretty good performances before a broken hand has derailed his season. He is projected to return on the 30th of March, giving him a bit under 2 weeks to perform in the rest of this season. Now, I don't think that he is going to be a 12 or 14 team league pickup this year. He is, for the season, the 256th ranked player, but saw himself sneak into the top 200 over the last couple of months, putting up some strong numbers, including very good rebound numbers. In fact, for the season, he's averaging 6 rebounds per 36 minutes, which for a point guard, shooting guard, is a pretty decent number. He also gets steals, he hits threes, and he's been really efficient, shooting 46% from the field, including 40% from three, to post a true shooting of 58%, which as a rookie is obviously really, really impressive when league average is about 55%. The team has been a marginal negative with him on the court. That's not too much to worry about as a rookie. Yeah, positive defensive box score plus minus is a great sign. And his other advanced numbers are pretty solid. Win shares above average, box score plus minus marginally below average PER. But everything looks like he can become a solid contributor. Of course, everything with the Lakers is in flux. We don't know whether Isaiah Thomas comes back. We don't know if Kentavious Caldwell-Pope comes back. We don't know what they do with their cap space in the offseason. But you could make a legitimate argument that Hart could be a starter at some point on an NBA team and be a solid back-end 12-team league player. I think the likelihood of it happening next season is pretty minimal, just given all the different machinations that have to go down. And would the Lakers trust him enough and go, well, we're happy with Josh Hart as our starting shooting guard? I think that seems somewhat unlikely, but I do think he's got the ability to get there. With his ability to hit threes and do it efficiently, to get steals, to be an above-average rebounder, to also be a guy who can contribute some assists, which are all things that he can do, that's all really positive for him as we move forward. But again, for the rest of this season, it seems unlikely that Hart's going to be able to contribute outside of 20-team leagues. Again, there's going to be 4 or 5 games left when he comes back, maybe a couple more, maybe I'm underselling it there. But we're talking KCP, Lonzo Ball, Isaiah Thomas, all in the mix ahead of him there, and he's unlikely to be seeing the sort of playing time that it's going to require for him to be a 12-team league guy. He did have a run where he was that guy, but that's just not going to continue this year, and there's a lot of flux in LA that's going to be happening across the summer. But he is a player that I like. I liked him heading into the draft. I like his statistical translations, and they've pretty much borne out the way that I expected, with the rebounds being a bit higher than I expected. And that does give him some scope to become a top 100 player at some point. All right, let's go DFS now. We'll start with the perfect lineup on FanDuel. Rajon Rondo, 55.8, and Dennis Schroeder at 55.5. They're your point guard. That shooting guard, Luki Kennard, 33.7, and Jimmy Harden, 55.7. At small forward, Corey Brewer, 30.5, and Jason Tatum, 47.2. At power forward, Blake Griffin, 54.8, and the chief, Al-Farouq Aminu, 42.1, while Yusuf Nurkic was your center at 53.5, and that was a total of 428.8 for a cost of $59,400. On DraftKings, it was Rondo at 57.25, Harden at 60.5, Jace Tatum at 49.25, The Undertaker, Dwayne Dedman at 46.75, Alex Len, 42.5, Dennis Schroeder, 58.25, The Chief had 45, and Nurkic had 51.75 for a grand total of 411.25, and that cost $48,900. Let's get in and preview DFS now for Wednesday's action across the NBA. Let's go to the first game of the night. It's the Memphis Grizzlies and the Philadelphia 76ers. Tyreke Evans wasn't on the injury report, so we expect him to return. Marc Gasol is also probable, as is Andy Harrison. So it could look like he would have a full complement of players, while Ivan Rabb is questionable. But if Gasol plays, Rabb's unlikely to see the court anyway. For Philadelphia, it's a pretty clean bill of health, except for Markel Fultz. At point guard, we're looking at Andy Harrison's at 5,800. Came back with really a strong game, but him playing alongside Tyreke, I'm not sure he's going to be able to exceed 30 points, so that might make him a bit of a fade, assuming that Evans plays. Well, Briante Weber also put up a big game last time, but of course Evans is going to cut into that playing time pretty significantly. At shooting guard, you've got Redick, you've got Bellinelli. I put very little trust in them, while Tyreke's at 8,000. I don't think you really want to be putting too much faith in Tyreke at this point. Yeah, he's been good in those games he's played, but he can burn you pretty comfortably, and that salary is a decent chunk that I don't think I'd want to go that way. At small forward, Bob Cove's at 6,000, always a tournament guy, and it's a pretty strong matchup for him, but not cash. While Dylan Brooksy Brooks is at 4,800, but with Tyreke and Gasol there, he's unlikely to reach that value. He just doesn't provide enough outside of the points category. For the power forwards, we've got Benny Simmons at 10,100. We love what Simmons is doing. He's giving you almost 50 a night over the last couple of games, but at 10-1, there are better ways that you can spend that money. While Šarić is at 6,200, and his numbers recently have really dipped, and his minutes have dropped under 30 as well, with the play of Justin Anderson cutting into his playing time a little bit. I can look at Šarić here and feel okay about it, but not spectacular. 4,400 for Jarrell Martin, and with everyone healthy, probably not. While Jermichael Green at 6,300, I know he was great in the last game and had 47 points. I just don't feel like with Gasol healthy, he's going to be able to put up those numbers. At center, Joel Embiid's at 10,800. I think that's too expensive for Embiid. The Gasol matchup does limit other teams and their production at the center position. And while Embiid, you could say he's maybe immune to that a little bit, he hasn't really had much success against the Grizzlies in the past. He had 32 points in 29 minutes last time, and that's not enough as a $10,800 player. While Gasol at 8,500 feels like that's a little bit too expensive. Over on DraftKings, I like Simmons way more over there. He is at $9,000, but not much else in this matchup really stands out. You can look at Šarić at 59. There's a little bit to see there. And Tyreke at 76 becomes an interesting tournament guy, while Marc Gasol's a lot more appealing at 7,500 as opposed to the 8,500 that he is over on FanDuel. Let's go on to the next game now. The Raptors and the Cavs, huge game here. On FanDuel, Freddie VanVleet is the one we want to look at here. He's questionable. DeMar DeRozan should be back after resting last game, whereas the Cavs, Rocket Rodney Hood is questionable with that back issue, and Tristan Thompson has been upgraded to questionable as well. Now, earlier in the day, Rocket was listed as out, but he has been upgraded to questionable. Kyle Korver is also out after the passing of his brother, so obviously all thoughts go out to Kyle and his family. There's still going to be some weird stuff happening in Cleveland with lineups here without Korver around, clearly, but Kevin Love is back and should see some minutes increase, I believe, in this game. Kyle Lowry is at 7,700. Point guards against the Cavs have been pretty strong. Now, I guess there's a chance that he rests on a back-to-back here, given DeRozan rested yesterday, but I'm not so sure. I would look at Lowry as a really strong tournament play, but that's probably it. VanVleet, DeLon Wright, Jose Calderon. I think it's really hard to consider either of those guys. At shooting guard, Jordy Clarkson at 46. Now, with Korver out, I really like Clarko here. I think he's got some pretty strong cash value. Right, he's going to have to see an increase in minutes. While DeRozan at 7,900. I think that's not a bad cash play. He should be fresh, clearly, having not played, and he's really, getting 40 points is not a stretch here for him. The plumber, J.R. Smith's at minimum salary, he would be a GPP sort of a guy. Small forwards, of course, we've got LeBron James. And he is at $12,800. That is very expensive, and I don't think you can use that in cash. The Raptors can put the brakes on opposition small forwards a bit, and while it is LeBron, he is averaging only 51 against the Raptors the last three times, which is still excellent, but it's not excellent enough at $12,800. So I think LeBron's a fade at that salary. The Jedi OG Anunoby.
Hello there.
I don't think you can use him either. At power forward, Love is up to 7,300, so that's really cranking that number up. Now, he was great in the last game, but at that price, I'm not sure that I'm ready to get back on. Well, Jeff Green at 47.
My name is Jeff.
I think at 4,700, given the injuries, especially if Thompson's out, I think Green becomes a pretty strong cash play. Serge Ibaka's at 5,400, and there are better ways out there to spend that money, I think. At centre, Valanciunas and Poeltl. 7,500 for Jonas is too expensive. Don't want to use Poeltl, and of course, we're not looking at Tristan Thompson really at all. On DraftKings, Love is at 6,400. Now, that is usable. I really like that on DraftKings. Well, Jordy Clarkson's at 4,700. That's priced a little bit too high, but I still think he's got tremendous tournament value. I just think his floor's a little bit shaky at that sort of elevated price. DeRozan at 8,000, probably also a bit high, whereas LeBron at 11,700, that's a more realistic price for LeBron James, and I think you can use that with more security than what you would do on FanDuel. Let's go on to the next game now. We're going to talk Knicks and Heat. No Hassan Whiteside, no Dwayne Wade again. So there's going to be some value opening up once more for Miami. At point guard, Tyler Johnson's at 48. He has really struggled lately, but it is a really point guard friendly matchup, so he is a GPP option. While the Iron Shoulder at 7,000, Goran Dragic, I feel that's almost pretty safe for cash. Also, Manny Moutier and Trey Burke, I don't want anything to do with them, nor Frank Ntilikina. The Duke, Wayne Ellington is a shooting guard, 4,200. He's been bombing in threes lately, but if he doesn't hit threes, he's not doing too much else. The good thing is that the Knicks are really easy for shooting guards to go up against. He's going to get his shots off. At 4,200, he is a tournament guy to have a look at. Well, Timmy Hardaway at 6,000. I feel like that is a decent cash play. He's getting the most minutes on the team comfortably. He's going to take his shots, and he should be around that 30-point mark. At small forward, you got Joshie Richardson at 6,000. I really like that for Richo. He had 45 in the double overtime game against the Nuggets, and I think that getting 30 out of him shouldn't be considered too tough. Well, Justice Winslow's production and minutes have plummeted, and Mick Beasley at 5,700 would strictly be a tournament option and not a super strong one. At power forward, Jim Johnson's at 5,500, just cranking out the numbers, and of course, with Whiteside out again, happy to go back to the well. Same with Kelly Olynyk at $6,000. Both of those guys have been comfortably surpassing that number in those games with Whiteside out. At center, we're talking Kylo Quinn at 5,300, and he's been putting up some strong numbers. In fact, his lowest score in his last five is 24, which is almost where you need it at 5,300. So he's not a bad option. Adebayo at 43, who should start again. He's been a bit up and down, but there is some tournament value there in Bam. While Enes Kanter at 59, he still gets double doubles no matter how many minutes he plays. I just don't like that price tag, and I think the ceiling on him is fairly limited. On DraftKings, Joshie Richardson's at 5,300. I love that for him there. Jim Johnson and Kelly Olynyk have both had their prices risen pretty high, and that does take a fair bit of the value away from them. Not totally, but they're far from as enticing as what they are over on FanDuel. Let's go on to the next game now. We're going to talk Charlotte Hornets and the Brooklyn Nets. Nick Batum is listed as doubtful, while Cody Zeller is questionable. And on the net side of things, Dante Cunningham is questionable as well. Of course, if Batum doesn't play, which seems likely, we're looking at Jez Lamb pretty strongly here. And if Zeller is out, maybe we go back to Bill Hernan Gomez, who was in the perfect lineup the last time the Hornets played. At point guard, Spencer Dinwiddie, he should remain on the bench. I hate that price of 6,200. That's a strong fade for me. Well, Kemba is up to 8,700 now. It's a really good matchup for Kemba Walker, so I think I would be okay with going for it, but that salary is pretty high. Shooting guards, we're looking at Caris LeVert at 6,000. I think that's probably pushed up a little bit too high there. And D'Angelo Russell at 7,400. He's been exceeding that number fairly regularly. I just don't have full faith in him just at this point, so it'd be tournaments only for him. at small forward, Jez Lambs at 6,600. That is a big price rise, and I think that probably takes him out of cash consideration on FanDuel. Well, Damari Carroll's at 58, and I'd feel more comfortable using Damari over Jez Lamb if I'm looking for a small forward on FanDuel. The Blue Swimmer at 5,400. Alan Crabb is always a tournament guy to me. Power forwards, Marv Williams, no. Rondé Hollis-Jefferson, 7,300. Really cranking out the numbers. The minutes are way up there for Rondé, so I do like using him here. I think he's got some cash value. At center, Cody Zeller, probably not. Dwighty Howard, 8,300. Just because of the opposition, I think you have to consider Howard in a tournament, but that's about it, while I wouldn't be looking too closely at Jarrett Allen. On DraftKings, D'Angelo and Dinwiddie are both tournament guys. I like Dinwiddie at the price of 5,600. There's ease of him being able to exceed that, but not feeling super confident for cash, while Lamb and Hollis-Jefferson are at really nice prices for cash over on DraftKings as well. Let's go to the LA Clippers and the Milwaukee Bucks, the Sean Kilpatrick Bowl here. Tyler Zeller has been upgraded to probable. That may take Thon McCur out of the rotation, or it will at least reduce his ability to have a big game like he did in the last one. At point guard, Austin Rivers is down at 5,700. Rivers didn't play particularly well today in that blowout game against the Wolves, but I think he can bounce back and put up, you know, close to 30, which gives him value to use in cash. Sindarius Thornwell not interested, while Eric Bledsoe at 7,700 has been putting up some fairly consistent numbers, and I don't think that he is a bad cash option at all. Brandon Jennings did sign his second 10-day contract, so he'll still be with the team, but he's doing very, very little, clearly. At shooting guard, Lou Williams is at 7,000. That price is way more appealing than what it has been in the past, but his production's been dipping at a fairly significant value, or level, sorry, and I don't think you can really rely upon him too much. While Chris Middleton at 7,600, I'd feel better using Middleton at 76 than Lou at 7,000. For the small forwards, we're looking at Yanni at 12,000. Yeah, that's fine. I'd prefer that over, say, LeBron at 12.8 pretty comfortably. I wouldn't say that he is a cash lock or anything along those lines, but it's a pretty good price for Giannis Antetokounmpo here. No small forwards on the Clippers. At power forward, you're looking at the Muppet, John Henson at 5,000. Big price reduction for him, which brings him into tournament consideration, while the table, Montrezl Harrell's at 43. I just don't see it for him. He's been up and down with minutes. He can put up the big gains, maybe in a tournament, but that would probably be about it. At center, DeAndre's at 77. I like his ability to really go off here, so I think he's a strong, strong tournament play, and you could even use him in cash, while Boban Marjanovic and Tyler Zeller probably aren't going to be getting it done for you. On DraftKings, Yanni at 11.1 is a strong cash play, while Austin Rivers at 58 in a similar spot. I also like DeAndre. I like Bledsoe. Toby Harris at 71 is pretty decent on DraftKings after a poor performance today. I think he's got the opportunity to bounce back and put up a good one. And I don't really like Jabari Parker on either side. The Nuggets and the Chicago Bulls, Lowry, Markkanen, and Zach LaVine are both doubtful. Chris Dunn has been ruled out, while Antonio Blakeney is questionable with a wrist sprain. At point guard, Campaign is at 5,500. I'm all about Campaign here. Cash and tournaments, no problem. While the Blue Arrow at 7,500, Jamal Murray, I feel like he's going to get you 35 almost no matter what, and I think that's a pretty good spot to be in. So both these point guards have value here, while Blakeney's at 4,000, and he beat his value last game pretty comfortably, but a slight price rise plus an injury concern makes him more of a tournament guy. At shooting guard, you got Farton Will Barton at 7,700. Love the matchup for Barton, but that price is probably a little bit too high on FanDuel, so I think I'd pass there. And Justin Holiday might get another start, but of course he's just not playing enough minutes. At small forward, Baby Neck Wilson Chandler's at 61. He had 40 in that double overtime game against the Heat, and I just feel like it's unlikely that he is going to repeat that sort of a performance. While the Hammer, Denzel Valentine, really let us down last game, and hard to trust the minutes that Hoiberg's going to give him on a regular basis. Power forwards, Noel Vonleh at 4,000. I feel like he's a strong cash cheap point guard. Power forward, sorry, give you 20-21 points, which is really strong at that price. While you've got PunchBob at 7,000, and he's been putting up some consistent numbers. Both of those guys, I think, can be cash players. While Paulie Millsap at 66, I think there are better ways of spending that cash. Chris Felizio, big games, two in a row. He's at 4,100. I actually like using him here. There's still some uncertainty with what they do with him, but I think at 4,100 he is in play here. Well, Nick Jokic is at 10.5. It's a really positive matchup for Jokic. He's averaging over 52 over the last five, so there's nothing wrong with considering him a cash option. On DraftKings, we've got Jokic, Barton, Portis, Payne, Felizio, and Vonleh. They are all cash options. So there's a ton of stackability in this game. Well, the Blue Arrow and Blakeney are some tournament guys, and you could even use Jamal Murray as a tournament option as well. All right, got a couple of games to get through now. Got the Pacers and the Pelicans. The Pelicans are 1-point favorite in their second of three games in a row. 221 is the over-under here. Jrue Holiday, we don't know if he'll return after being out with an illness on Tuesday. Of course, if he is out, it boosts Rajon Rondo's value, Etuan Moore, and Ian Clark. At point guard, Daz Collison's at 6,100. Strong return to the starting lineup last time out for Colo. I think he's fine to use. Probably lean more tournament than cash, but there is some cash value there. Well, Rondo at 54. If Holiday's out, that's a very, very strong option. You'd throw him in a tournament otherwise, but if Jrue is out, I like that for cash quite a bit. As for Clark at 4,000, he's a tournament type guy too. Vic Oladipo's down at 8,800 because his production has been waning, but this matchup is a decent positive for Oladipo, so I think you should feel a decent level of comfort with throwing him in there. While Jrue at 9,000, coming off an illness, I don't think you can use him at that price. Lance Stevenson, surprisingly putting up good numbers. He's at 4,100, Lance. I would only be looking at him more as a tournament guy and not really a cash player. Well, Etuan Moore at 44 is only in consideration if Holiday misses. At power forward, Tone Davis is at 12-1. We know that he's going to put up the numbers. Blowouts are a risk. Injuries are a risk. A little hard to use him in cash, but I don't think it's something you should be entirely shying away from. Well, 5,500 for Thad Young, I think, is a pretty good spot. Not interested too much in Nick Mirotic. And at center, you've got Miles Turner, who's playing really well. 6,800 for Miles. He had 39 last game. I think that is definitely worth a look in a tournament for sure. And in cash, I could see you leaning that way and having some success. On DraftKings, Oladipo's at 8-2 and Collison at 55. I think they're both cash and tournament guys. And Davis at 11-5 is always in a strong position. Jrue at 79 is a much better bet on DraftKings than FanDuel, but it doesn't make him a must-own guy. While Miles Turner at 68, not quite as favorable as how things look on FanDuel. Let's go through now to the last game of the night. We've got the Wizards and the Spurs. Kawhi is out. The Spurs are favored by 5, and the total is 203.5. John Wall obviously out as well. This is a game that I think is a real stay away for DFS purposes. Pat Mills, Thomas Satoransky, and DeJounte Murray. Not much I really like from them. I could see Satoransky at 58 being a guy that I look at. Murray at 63 is probably a little bit too highly priced. Dan Green's at 48, not interested there, while Beal at 76. Actually, I think Brad Beal at 76, despite being a negative matchup, I think him at that sort of a price, sub 8,000, is cash usable and has some tournament upside pretty clearly. At small forward, Kyle Anderson, low ceiling, low floor, not happening for me. Oubre at 5,000 has been really disappointing lately, so I think he is someone to pass on, while Otto Porter at 7,300 also been quite disappointing, averaging only 27 over his last five, so someone in a negative matchup here that I'd probably steer clear of. At power forward, Markieff's at 56. I feel okay about that. Disappointing last time, and it is a tough matchup for Morris, but I feel okay about using him, while Aldridge at 9,700. Yes, LaMarcus, he's averaging 52 over the last three. Feel like that's spending 9-7 on Aldridge is not necessarily the best way of building a winning lineup. At center, you've got Gortat and Mihinmi, who I want nothing to do with, and same as Pau Gasol at 48. On DraftKings, Otto Porter at 66, that's a much better spot. I like that. I like Satoransky at 54, and I like Markieff at 55 there as well. Aldridge is also a little bit more palatable at 88, while Brad Beal's the opposite. He's up at 86 on DraftKings, and I think that is just a little bit too high. Let's take a look at Yahoo now to finish this show off. For tournaments, Tone Davis, Jokic, Oladipo, LaMarcus Aldridge, Daz Collison, The Duke, The Blue Swimmer, Chris Felizio, Jeff Green, Etuan Moore. They're all your tournament guys. For cash and tournament, we've got Vonleh, Adebayo, Clarko, The Muppet, Jim Johnson, Campaign, Kelly Olynyk, Jezza Lamb, The Blue Arrow, Dwight Howard, Kemba Walker, and Ben Simmons. On Moneyball for tournaments, it's Tone Davis, Jamal Murray, Kyle Lowry, D'Angelo Russell, Joshy Richardson, Noah Vonleh, Antonio Blakeney. And for cash and tournaments, Felizio, Adebayo, Jordan Clarkson, Thad Young, Jim Johnson, Campaign, Olynyk, Dragic, Jez Lamb, Bob Portis, Hollis Jefferson, Farton Will Barton, Kevin Love, Kemba Walker. And to wrap it up, on Draft Stars for tournaments, Benny Simmons, Kevin Love, D'Angelo Russell, Baby Nick Wilson Chandler, Thomas Satoransky, Pat Mills, Chris Felizio, Noah Vonleh, and Paulie Zipser. And for cash, we're looking at Jordy Clarkson, Joshie Richardson, Jim Johnson, Daz Collison, Campaign, Jez Lamb, Kelly Olynyk, Hollis Jefferson, Portis, Barton, Walker, and Jokic. Don't forget, check out Locked On NBA on Thursday when Adam Silver will be on with David Locke. And if you are listening to this on Apple Podcasts, go leave a 5-star rating and a review. You can also find this podcast on Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Spotify, and on YouTube, where you can subscribe, leave a comment, and a thumbs up. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Jordan Bell.